And welcome to a brand new life, to a brand new day, all the way from the wastelands of California. My name is Michael, and I'm a mere figment of your imagination. I look forward to once again serve you those conscious coma-inducing vibrations. Oh yeah, first-time listeners, turn on, tune in, and drop out. This is a very different kind of show, a place where you don't feel so alone. Let us chase away the light no matter what you at home choose to believe. I do admire you for your curiosity, live and direct right now on the TuneIn Radio app. Search End of Days and you'll find the 24/7 network, or go to michaeldeacon.com. If you care to interact with me or other listeners in the chat room, go there now. My guest tonight is Ilana Freeland. She is a writer, ghostwriter, speaker, storyteller, and teacher who researches and writes on deep state issues, including the stories of survivors of MKUltra ritual abuse and invasive electromagnetic weapons. She is best known for Chemtrails, HARP, and the full spectrum dominance of planet Earth. Once again, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for allowing me into your hearts and into your minds. Here we are again on a night like this. Feels great to be back under pale moonlight. I certainly hope you had a great week out there. Please feel free to call in any time. Questions for myself or the guest are welcome. Don't be shy. That number is 760-332-8724. One more time, 760-332-8724. Now, I believe my guest is waiting. Let's bring her in.
Hi, Michael.
There you are. What's going on, Ilana?
Well, I'm here in the Pacific Northwest, and I like your intro to your show.
It's can you
usual.
Can you actually hear me when I do that?
Yeah, I heard you.
That's not good. I thought I had you on mute.
Well, I was being quiet.
Yeah, I just didn't want you to hear me saying anything inappropriate, that's all.
No, you didn't.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Because sometimes I tend to do that, so I apologize out there for those who I've offended in the past. And tonight we'll be discussing Chemtrails, HARP, and the Space Fence and directed free energy technology. And for some people, it really is difficult to believe that the planet has been weaponized, just like you say in your book.
Yes, it has. I'm very sorry to say it myself, but I have made a careful study of it. And weaponizing is the name of the game now. Everything's being weaponized in the name of full spectrum dominance.
Yes, and before we jump into all these great topics, can you tell the listeners just a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a writer, and I was a teacher for years. I was in the Waldorf movement. I'm a student of Rudolf Steiner's philosophy and cosmology. I have written many things. I think the first time I ever wrote was when I was 8 years old. I was writing a short story, and my teacher accused me of plagiarism. I'll never forget it. I made that story up, but I was accused of copying it. I guess that was the beginning of the writing career. And I've been involved in looking for the secrets behind the American government. I'm a 60s person. I came of age in the 60s. I had tea with President Kennedy in the Rose Garden when I was 15. I was at Girls Nation. He said something about how I looked like his wife at that time, and I became sort of a celebrity just for a few minutes and maybe overnight in my state. And I gave a talk about my time with Kennedy, and then 3 months later he was assassinated. And I was invited back to those civic groups to talk again about my day with Kennedy, and learn the hard way what it is to give a speech in front of people who are all sobbing and breaking down. It's hard to believe that we were so naive back then as a nation. A very different nation from today, but I have been diligently pursuing knowledge of how things really work in the underbelly, what I call sub rosa, what is hidden in the American government. And I when I started to write the Chemtrails book, I was actually asked by my publisher if I could write it. And I had a file on it. I had a file on HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project up in Gakona, Alaska, a big acres and acres of phased array antennas. And I had been friends with Clifford Carnicum in northern New Mexico for a few years at that time. Clifford really, I pretty much blame him for why I'm in this movement so deep, because I was very interested in how he was pursuing what was happening to the beautiful blue skies of northern New Mexico at that time. That would have been the late 90s and early 2000s. And he was collecting data from his HEPA filter and precipitation and analyzing it to see just what was in those trails, because he knew that they were not contrails. A contrail will last maybe 30 seconds at the most, because it's mainly water vapor and particulates, and it'll just sort of be subsumed into the sky. But these trails behind the jets at that time were long and enduring. They stayed for a long time and then sort of spread out into a strange cirrus cloud cover. He collected samples of my spit and of my blood, and we looked at it under the microscope, and lo and behold, there was a fiber, many fibers, and they were actually a creature. As he began to analyze it and go deeply into it, dissecting and down to it was very tiny. I don't know really how he did it. And discovered what we now call Morgellons, and realized that these fibers were actually being distributed from these jet planes. So I've been friends with Clifford all these years, and I got really deeply into this pursuit of this knowledge. And people may wonder how I could know so much. But, you know, we're in the age of the internet, and particularly for national security issues, which means secret issues. That's what this is. It's not talked about. Now, of course, they're bandying about the term geoengineering and admitting that they may have to do it. They are doing it. But one thing they do not admit is they have been doing it for about 20 years. Full on from the sky. We've been subjected to all sorts of chemicals, all sorts of nanoscale entities, biologically engineered, all sorts of tiny, tiny computers, microprocessors, tiny sensors, all released in the upper atmosphere, and we breathe all this stuff in because it's all very tiny and we don't see it. And then it goes into our lungs and creates all these lung ailments that everybody complains about. It then goes into our bloodstream and then easily bypasses the blood-brain barrier, goes into our brain. So all of this is being done covertly for a variety of reasons. And that's kind of what the most recent book is about. Under an Ionized Sky, From Chemtrails to Space Fence Lockdown, I try to show how a very technological system that encompasses the entire Earth and above the Earth has been created with us plugged into it, and the reasons why we've been plugged into it, and what the great interest in our responses and reactions to this system. Why are these reactions so important? And that's pretty much how I've spent the last 6 to 8 years.
Yes, and you've spent a great significant amount of time putting this together, and it's a fantastic book. I read most of it, if not all of it, and I thought it was a very interesting read. For those who have not checked it out, please go do so. I'm pretty sure you could find it on Amazon.com and probably other bookstores, correct?
Yes, yeah. Feral House published it, as it did my previous book. And there are distributorships all over, in Europe and the Americas.
Amazing. Now, why is there so much resistance with the Republican Party and conservatives in regards to global warming? I hear the same talking points over and over, and it makes me wonder why is there so much resistance over this?
Well, first of all, I don't know that I agree with you. One of the things I've been very pleased by is that it seems that this is a bipartisan, when people really do make the connection to the military industrial intelligence complex, that's a big part of it. I mean, what you're talking about is, there is resistance to considering that global warming is even going on.
Correct.
I think there's a great deal of confusion, and the mainstream media has been very complicit with those who have sought out confusing the public in order to keep this national security project completely secret. So there is global warming going on, as you know, from my vantage point, but my issue and the way I was seeing how some of these people were talking that there is no global warming is they realized that the Paris Climate Conference and the IPCC that was feeding the statistics into the Paris Climate Conference in 2015, it was all bogus and all contrived and made up. A lot of statistics were absolute lies, particularly because they wanted to get the carbon moneymaker going. And that's the big reason that there was all this obfuscation, confusion, wrong data, making people using fear porn to feel that the Earth was, you know, ready to collapse and that the, you know, the end times were here, et cetera. And just all this fear porn. But it wasn't, to my knowledge, it was not just Republicans. It was straight across the liberal board.
There's a lot of people, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen any particular faction that either is pro or con as far as our ridiculous two-party system. But I believe that what people were saying was accurate, that, hey, wait a minute, this is bogus. This is not happening. But if you study the technology, like the ionospheric heaters and all the radar installations that are involved in this process going on in our atmosphere, then you realize that, yeah, it is heating. It is a heating factor. Doesn't mean you can't create icy conditions and plummeting temperatures. You absolutely can. It's mainly just the technology itself is initially warming because you're using mostly microwaves. You're using very high-powered microwaves in order to create the conditions by which weather is manipulated, for one thing. But weather is only one thing that's being manipulated. But let's be very clear. To my knowledge, there is no natural weather anymore. Not to my knowledge.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's just fascinating that we have these people that mostly deal with politics talking about an issue that they really don't have too much knowledge in themselves, except for talking points and things they hear other people repeat. It's quite atrocious. Don't you agree?
Well, it is, and it's because it's political. You're absolutely right. It's not really about astrophysics. It's not really about plasma physics and geoengineering. It's really about politics.
Yeah, it's
recently,
that.
Recently, as you know, President Trump appointed a Space Corps. And before that, he reinstituted something that we used to have called a National Space Council, which has citizens and politicos and tech scientists, et cetera, on it. So I always make that clear in my talks that I give, that we have entered a space age. Let's be under no illusion. And it's not about going to Mars or going to the moon, though I'm sure that those things are very interesting to some of the people involved in the space program. But it is about the first step, which is required to these people, that would be NASA, NOAA, the U.S. Air Force, the new Space Corps, et cetera, all these people, they want full spectrum dominance over planet Earth first. Then we launch into our solar system and perhaps beyond. Certainly, the fact that our atmosphere is ionized, and probably we should talk a little about that, our atmosphere is now not the same atmosphere that people were breathing even 30 years ago. This is an electrified, plasma-ized, battery-ready, antenna-like atmosphere that has been readied in order to obtain full spectrum dominance over the electromagnetic spectrum of every aspect of life. And that includes our biology, our mentation in our brains, our planetary life force of the trees and how they take in the carbon and release oxygen. All of this is being it is seen that it must be under full control before the space age can go on to something off planet, and that's what's going on now. But it, you know, the problem is, to me anyway, it's just a secret. It's not being talked about. Yeah. We're not being prepared for it. We haven't been told the truth about some of the fallout and blowback from this technology for life forms here on Earth. So that's why I was so irritated about it that I just started writing those books, because I want the people to know what our condition is.
Yeah, to know the truth.
Take care of ourselves.
Definitely, definitely. And I'm glad you decided to write these books. They're fantastic. And I know you also have mentioned former President Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative, SDI, or Star Wars, whatever people want to call it. I have interviewed Dr. Albert Taylor, who basically evaluated the satellite system designs for this project. And when we were talking off air, he mentioned certain technology that even he questioned. And this made me wonder, well, he didn't exactly say so, but my mind went to directed free energy technology once I was talking to him about the situation in North Korea and if we should ever have any kind of a worry about any outside forces coming in and dropping anything on us since we have this technology. And it seemed like he was very calm and relaxed about this whole situation. He seemed like nothing could hurt us. Makes you wonder, right?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think of that would hurt us is us ourselves. I mean, that's really
true.
What I think of when I think of directed energy weapons. I mean, Tesla was all about free energy, but there's been so much misinformation and disinformation around what free energy really is. And that's why I have in the book, and you've read most of it, so you know what I'm talking about. In chapter two, I go very surface-wise into three concepts that I don't think you can understand the science that is going on now.
Oh, with plasma,
unless
right?
You understand those concepts. And that would be the ether and the scalar technology,
right,
and plasma. I mean, these three are what obsess me and what I read about in order to understand, better grasp how they work. Because we're living now in a non-Newtonian, non-Einsteinian science. And that too is not being talked about. And many, many college programs are still, in my mind, to a degree, wasting the time of the bright science minds that believe totally that that Einstein and Newton are still the core of our science, when really we have moved on to a quantum type of science in looking at a variety of forms of life and consciousness and parallel dimensions.
Yeah, it's interesting you said that, because I was going to mention consciousness, and it's definitely hard to avoid the implication that consciousness and quantum mechanics are definitely linked.
Oh, yes, and it's really easy once you begin to think about it. I mean, think about thinking itself. It's not material. It's not physical. The brain is not producing thoughts. That was another piece of misinformation, that people were sold. And, when we have a thought, it's in a free space of some sort. It's not even in three space. It's a free space. And that in itself indicates, a parallel dimension. And I really got into this because I studied MK Ultra very deeply for about 10 years, about 20 years ago. And I really wanted to understand how mind control had become part of the arsenal used not merely against external enemies, but against American citizens as well, who were being used and exploited by our so-called intelligence community. So as I studied the experiments that were run in the 149 subprojects of MKUltra, some of those subprojects, it became very clear to me that that thinking and thought, which are the tools of consciousness, to my mind, were not at all physical. And certainly the metaphor that I finally struck on that and felt really comfortable with, and I still use it, is the thinking of a diver. And the brain, yes, we need the brain, but the brain is like a diver's diving board, needs the diving board to make a really decent dive. But the one who decides on the dive itself and makes the dive itself is the diver. So you have the diver, the dive, and the diving board. And that's really how I see the brain playing into this. It's important to have a good brain. I have a good brain. I like to think I inherited it from my father, who was a Navy intelligence scientist, an inorganic chemist, that was completely exploited, by the way, by Navy intelligence his entire life. But I have a good brain, but when I'm thinking, I'm right. Very aware that there's a part of me that is now really exploring and kind of moving in free space. And maybe I have a tendency in my research to make a lot of notes, get a lot of material, go through it all, and put it aside and let it incubate for sometimes weeks, sometimes months, sometimes just days. But that incubation is essential. I don't think about it during that time. It simply goes deep into me in some sort of like a loam in the earth or something.
Yeah.
And then when I return to those thoughts, suddenly over half my work is done for me. Some part of me has gone through and made connections, gone a little deeper, seems to really know something about it, whereas when I put it to bed, I can't say that I knew much about it. I certainly had done some studying. So to me, consciousness is, while we're living in this three-space world, going about our business, a part of us is living in another dimension. And, do I know where that dimension is? Could I go there physically? Well, no, I couldn't. Do I know where it is? Well, I know it's not here, like here, three space. It is in some other part of our fantastic, extraordinary, complex universe, that quantum physics has now, allowed us to consider. And we don't have to necessarily nail it down. It's sort of like the Heisenberg principle. You know, you can't nail some things down. If you try to nail them down, they change. And suddenly you have something very different from what you started with. So this is all extremely exciting. And I'm really thrilled to have finally returned to science. I had a biology background, but I have returned full bore to the science of today. Because it is so exciting. A lot of it I don't understand. I'm like anybody. I just read through it. I get a few concepts that I can kind of hold on to. And then, you know, I make a few notes and then I let the incubation process work. And slowly but surely, I am coming to a point where I can grasp a lot of the concepts you know, I don't think there's many science courses you could take in university where you would cover those concepts. I really don't. I think this is very, a very esoterically chosen, science level for global elites, scientists. They have, pre-chosen to work on what they want them to work on. Whereas the rest of us plebeians, all the masses in our programs, we're simply told that the Newtonian, Einsteinian world is good enough. So there's a lot going on, that is not seen in the New York Times and Washington Post or in National Geographic or all the silly science magazines that they call for science. There's a lot going on and it's up to us to sort of become detectives to ferret out how this technology is working, not just for weather. Weather's easy to figure out how they're doing that, weather engineering. There are some other things that are not so easy to figure out how they're doing it, but at least in the book Under an Ionized Sky, I've drawn as complete a picture as I can of the equipment, the infrastructure needed in order to do all of the wireless operations that the military industrial intelligence complex demands to do in our space age for full spectrum dominance of planet Earth.
Yes, and I agree with you about letting those thoughts sort of manifest in their own right, perhaps even letting them marinate, as one would say, before you get that final product and thought in motion. I guess that's one way of putting things there. And
yeah, marinate, that's a good word.
Yeah, and one other thing before we move on from consciousness. I've been thinking myself plenty of times here, what if consciousness is both inside and outside of the brain? Or maybe it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, I don't tend to think it has a place. It certainly, we tend to think it's in the head.
Right, that's where I tend to believe it must be, in somewhere in the forehead region.
But that's the brain. I actually can experience thought from my chest. I'm not sure how that works.
Some say gut.
Yeah, well, that would be instinct or intuition. And certainly gut would be the word for that. Because I think you've probably been reading about health and the loss of health, wherein the gut is completely correlated with the brain. And I studied Chinese medicine for 6 years, and the correlation is absolutely there as well. The gut and the brain, they go together. So, yeah, gut-level knowing. And then there's what Rudolf Steiner calls etheric thinking, and that's from the heart. And that is a very developed thinking, and I'm not saying I'm a master of that, not in the least. But there are times when I can tell that the thinking of my brain has moved into my chest, and now I'm at a really deeper level. And so the reason I'm happy with your question about consciousness is I just want to say this in case I don't get back to it.
Go ahead.
The consciousness is, I'm known as the bringer of bad news, right? I mean, I'm talking about a military that is out of control, a nation that is being run basically by defense corporations, and that includes telecoms, and that includes social media. They all work for the military. The military is the only one with any money. We're kind of stuck in this. But do I have an idea of how we can disentangle ourselves from this to some degree? and that would depend on people's commitment. Yes, and I do think it's consciousness. I do think that if we were to, I don't own a cell phone, I don't own a television, never have, never will. There are certain mind control devices, weapons, I call them, that people seem to be very enamored of. And I think probably these things, besides being electromagnetic and therefore weakening, the body and the life vitality system of the body, the etheric force, if you will, it also is a mind control way of weakening our will to think our own thoughts, to pursue whatever it was that we came into life to do. That most of us, if you get down to it, you'll hear the childhood stories where, when I was a child, for example, people would say, well, what do you want to be when you grow up, little girl?
Right.
And I would say, I'm going to be a writer and a teacher. There was never any doubt. I always knew exactly what I was going to do. How to get there, well, that's another story.
You followed your true will.
Oh, yes, yes. And someone like me, yes, I have a strong will, but I didn't always have a discipline of it. You know, in the word discipline is disciple. I was not a good disciple of myself for a long time. I had to struggle with myself the same as everyone does. And so when I say to people that, yeah, I can show you things about what's in your blood-brain barrier, what's gone beyond your blood-brain barrier,
right,
what's in your blood, what kind of heavy metals are floating around in you that are really destroying your health, and I can tell you ideas that we're all coming up with of ways to detox, ways to choose a better lifestyle, eat better, take care of yourself. But really, when we get down to it, we're talking consciousness. And that consciousness is the same consciousness that can have perhaps a fantastic meditative experience. But it's the same one that is the one that will say, no, you're not going to have half a quart of ice cream every day, because that's going to destroy your intestinal tract, and that is the seat of your will. So you will not do that. That's the consciousness that now has the will operant in it. So, you know, consciousness is a lot of things.
It really is.
And
yeah.
I maintain that it will save us. It'll save us on a personal level so that we have a quality of life all the way to the end and aren't running off to the doctor and the hospitals to fix us when we all know that's a joke. It's a part of us that is, I like to say, is basically untapped in most Americans. We're so drawn to the outer world and the externalities of life and the pleasure principle and the convenience principle and the comfort principle, that we really don't know much about actual consciousness and being responsible for it. But if we can do that, we can have a tremendous quality of life even as we're fighting and contesting this technology that is overtaking us and our offspring and our grandchildren and the forests of California that are all dying.
Oh, yeah.
There are many, many, many things, many challenges, but we have got to have a hold on our consciousness, or we will not be able to do much at all.
Yeah, that's very true, and I agree with you on all those points. And another thing one must conceive in their minds is letting go of the anger and hate that one has in their hearts. People out there will never be happy unless they let go of that anger.
Well, and that's, I'm glad you brought that up, Michael, because that has to do with emotions. And I'm not a very emotional person. That's not to say that I suddenly can't be moved by something and I'll start crying, like something that deeply moves me.
Right.
There is no problem. I have no problem with doing that if it occurs. I'm not repressing anything is what I'm saying. But I am so taken with thinking, and a lot of people learn to hate thinking as they did reading in the terrible, the progressively more and more terrible American school system.
I agree.
That taught them to hate academics, taught them to hate reading, taught them that thinking is really sort of beside the point. And what really counts is what you feel, what your emotions are. And I do not agree with that. Emotions to me are like weather. They come, they go. You're in a mood. Maybe you give yourself to it and you feel anger or you feel sadness or you feel loneliness or whatever. It's weather. It's weather blowing through. And it certainly should be attended to. It may have some good information for us, but it is not something to cling to and claim that this is us. This is me. It is simply the weather that is blowing through. Whereas our thoughts are, can be more serious. I don't mean the thought of, I'm going to go to the store and get a quart of milk. I mean the thought that says, well, what is plasma? And why are our scientists turning our entire sky into plasma? Why are all the clouds now not the clouds of yesteryear of moisture and particulates, but they are plasma clouds. They are dry clouds.
Yes.
What do they need that plasma for? So now I'm on an adventure. I'm on an inquiry into just some thoughts, not to say that I'm going to come up with the right answer, but that I am exercising my mind to inquire into my life condition and why these things are going on in my time and my where I am. This is the kind of consciousness that I think people ought to spend more time on that than on whether they like or dislike Trump. Whether, you know, their friends are pleasing them or displeasing them. All of that stuff is really just, so beside the point of what is significant to one's life. I can't even begin to, comment on it. Which may be why I'm not much good at small talk.
It's terrible. It really is awful. I have lost plenty of friends and listeners because of the election. And the politics that go on here. People get mad that I, let at times people from the far left come on here, and then people that lean more towards the right get upset with me, and it vice versa. You can never win with the audience.
Well, and that's what I mean is people don't realize it. If they would think about it, I think they'd see that I'm right. They have been bamboozled. They have been misled and guided afar by the mainstream media.
I agree.
If you think about it, we just don't know much about what's going on outside our little neighborhood or our family or our little town. We get that from the media, and we are very fortunate today to be in a condition whereby we are not just subject to mainstream media, which has truthfully, and I've documented this in my Sub Rosa America books about the CIA and Operation Mockingbird. Our mainstream media, and I'm thinking here of the New York Times, the Washington Post, NBC, CBS, ABC, etc., they are all controlled by an operation called Mockingbird.
I agree, yes.
That is a CIA run. So we've had that since the 70s, since the early 70s.
For a long, long time.
For those,
I'm sorry to cut you off there, but for those that are just joining in right now, let me bring it full circle really quickly here. And, Elena, I've heard you. Oh my God, what did I just say there? Elana. There we go.
Well, that's okay. Elana's not too bad.
I know. I'm like, wait, that's not her name. But yes, I've heard you mention, of course, the notion of a full spectrum dominance plan, and I fully believe that there is one. There is certainly an agenda, and we're not a part of it. And like you said, all of this began really with the Germans, who were the founders of mind control and the human experiments. You could thank Joseph Mengele for all of those accomplishments that he had out there in his time. And yeah, and to go further, nothing new under the sun. Just things evolve over time. And in my honest opinion, the more modern form of mind control is the current form of mind control, in my opinion, is through television and the internet, social media, some of the greatest creations of mankind. And they're used for both good and evil. And it always seems to come down to that, the battle of good versus evil.
Yes, and I certainly am a fan of that. I consider this war that I'm fighting in the geoengineering to be a spiritual battle. And the reason I say that is it's the pro-life, those who love nature, which has guided us for millennia, and this idea of transhumanism, which seeks to enhance so-called our humanity and take us over and turn us into some sort of BMI, a brain-machine interface, or BCI, brain-computer interface. This is really on the dock. This is what they want. This is part of the full-spectrum dominance. And to get there, what they have done is taught us to despise thinking, despise analysis, have no confidence in ourselves that we can know what the experts purportedly know, the experts who have been forced to sign non-disclosure agreements, whose families have been threatened, who have been killed. This is our condition. Our scientists are silent. So citizen journalists like myself finally just have to go, whatever, I'm going to write this book, and I'm a really good researcher, so I know how to do research, and I will do the best I can until scientists come forward and have enough of the education of the new science, not the old science particularly, so that they can interpret what is going on at NASA and all of the space age oriented military industrial intelligence complex. I mean, we have got to have more hands on deck of people who take their courage in their hands and don't worry about their careers or perhaps even their own lives, and really set things straight so that people can have those thought forms in their minds that are close to the truth and on their way to the truth, instead of having to wade through constant deceptions and constant manipulation of the emotional in themselves.
Even freedom, even freedom of thought seems to be gone.
Oh yes, I've watched it go.
My goodness, that's amazing.
It is, and I want to add something that I want you to be aware of.
Okay.
Yes, I am opposed to the cell phones, but not just because of brain cancer.
Yeah, let's talk about that. 4G, correct?
Yeah, the cell phones are being used to pulse people with emotional signatures. Just as you'll see these shooters that are used, these kids, will be triggered in some way to shoot up a high school or wherever they are, and then probably kill themselves. In a very similar manner, but perhaps not as serious, seemingly serious, people who carry their cell phones around, I'm telling you, they are being pulsed with frequencies that emotional signatures of anger, fear, sadness, all of the emotional panoply. These signatures are known, well known, to those who target people. And there are many Americans and people across the world who are being mercilessly targeted by directed energy weapons that have taking over their minds, taking over their thoughts, taking over their emotions. And now we're going to join them as soon as that 5G goes up. And is every couple of hundred yards, in a neighborhood.
Correct.
And we're going to have the Internet of Things, which truthfully we already have, and the 60 hertz in the walls, and the smart meters and our cell phones, et cetera, et cetera. All of that is going to be grist for the mill of absolute control over our thoughts and emotions. Now this is how it is. This is not coming in 20 years or 50 years the way you'll read in the lying mainstream media. This is here. And now the 5G will be the culmination because it's millimeter waves. This is not the same creature as a 4G at all.
Yeah, and just to add to that, I mentioned the 4G before the 5G, really because there's plenty of studies out there. Some will say it's pseudoscience. Some will say it's a valid study. There's people out there who claim that the Wi-Fi is linked to autism.
Oh, well, yes.
In early childhood development, that is.
Yes, but along with that, I have to say that if you want to be on the right trail of that, yes, it is Wi-Fi. It is wireless technology. But it is also the nanoparticles of aluminum that we have breathed in from what is being spewed from the combustion chambers of jets and rockets launched in the various private and public sector launch pads. This all, we are breathing it in, it makes us more conductive, and aluminum is known to be directly correlated with autism and Alzheimer's.
So it's everywhere.
Autism at
too.
The beginning of life.
Terrible.
And Alzheimer's at the end.
Yes, and I'm glad you mentioned that. I live in an area called the Imperial Valley, and we have lots of agriculture out here, lots of farming, and lots of dirt, lots of desert out here, and lots of crop dusting goes on out here. And a lot of these individuals, they actually crash quite often. There's a couple almost every year out here in El Centro where I live. And all these things, it adds up. All these chemtrails you see in the sky out here, all the pesticides in the sky out here, it's really not a good place to live out here in the Imperial Valley where I'm at. Lots of asthma. I think it's 1 in 3 kids out here grow up having all sorts of terrible lung infections, especially in my area. And it certainly makes sense. I definitely recall a time when I was outside more and I was getting really sick just being outside.
Yeah, I mean, what I don't understand is if, let's just think of another war scenario. Say, we're in France. In World War II, and the Germans are coming in. It would behoove us to know how many Germans are coming in, what kind of tanks and things they have, how we're going to defend ourselves, how we're going to take care of our children, all these things. But we're not doing that regarding this technology. I mean, it constantly amazes me. Yes, when I go and give talks or I do radio interviews, there are a lot of people who will play those over and over and over and pay attention to details and then go on to someone else and add a little bit. And there are people who are spending the time because they get what I'm saying. We're at war.
I agree, yeah.
And this is not just a matter of our blood being spilled and we die. This is a slow death that we are being subjected to. It is partially for the profits of the medical industry and big pharma. Absolutely. Monsanto made a deadly seed, the Terminator seed, so that it was aluminum resistant because Monsanto knew what was coming from the sky. They knew it was aluminum nanoparticles. So they made their seed aluminum resistant, so that they could, have these genetically modified organisms, and now subject all of us to whatever else is in those GMO foods. Now I eat organic. Some people say, well, that doesn't matter anymore. Well, it does matter. It is true that when you're growing organic food, without a covered area, that garden will have silt falling of smart dust and, aluminum nanoparticles along with strontium, barium, titanium, lithium. I mean, come on. I can name a dozen metals that we're eating, and are in our brain. So this is how the battle is being done. It's not bombs dropping. It's a thin silt. And because this is an invisible warfare, because we can't see the bombs dropping and we can't see that we're breathing them in and they're going into our blood, beyond our blood-brain barrier and into our blood and all of our organs and our soft tissues, it's hard to make it real. See, this is an invisible warfare. Our Wi-Fi is invisible. The radio waves, the microwaves, the gamma waves, you know, maybe you can see a laser. Maybe you can see a laser when it's coming down from a satellite. But basically, this is an invisible war that is guaranteed to make us die slowly so that corporations can profit from our slow death.
It seems now, like it.
Well, it is true. I mean, I absolutely know that's true. But so what do we do? Well, we develop our consciousness. We begin to look beyond the medical community who will not help you, They do not, they either do not know or they are complicit and realize this is a federal operation and they better keep their mouth shut. So, you know, it's very much like the Nazi onslaught. It's a hidden covert warfare against the people of the United States by our own government, by our own government forces.
I agree, so, yes.
So what we have to do is start inquiring and start building a bit of a lattice work in our minds of how this works. And that's why I wrote The Under an Ionized Sky. Now, you know, people have a lot of people have a lot of trouble concentrating now, a lot of trouble reading. They just can't hold on to those, you know, they read a sentence and suddenly it just evaporates.
They go off.
They read.
Yeah.
And this is all from the technology we've been subjected to for all these decades. It weakened our will. Television puts you in alpha wave. Thinking is beta wave. We need beta wave in order to think. So we're all alpha folks. Our cell phones. How many people do you see staring at that stupid cell phone?
I'm addicted to mine. I won't lie to you. And they designed it for that purpose.
It's very addictive. We need to, if we're going to fight, and not, you know, be like, oh, Ilana, save us. No, Ilana can't save anyone. I'll be lucky to save myself. But I can make things clear because I have a very clear mind that I have protected from these technologies all these years. You know, I mean, yes, I'm on my computer a lot, so I'm already, but I have it surrounded with Wilhelm Reich stuff. I have all sorts of holy hand grenades around it, crystals, you name it. Hey, if someone tells me it works, it's going around my computer because I need to protect myself from the radiation.
Yeah, you do.
So that I can keep thinking and keep writing to clarify our condition and the context by which this war works. That's all I can do. I can't save anyone. I can't say, oh yeah, eat this vitamin or this mineral or this, have this three times a day and you'll be fine.
I
can't do that.
It's almost too late. The nanotechnology, the RFID chips, all of these things are already implemented to further evolve the transhumanist agenda.
Well, it is, but it's not too late. No, we have.
You don't think it's not too late
on getting the nanos out of you? Yes, and I'll say a name. It's a very hard name. It took me a long time to be able to say it. Tony Pantelaresco in Canada has Morgellons, and so he has been researching.
That's a long name, by the way.
It is. It's Italian.
Good job.
He has been researching all the different things that will get the nanoparticles out of us. And if people get the book, read carefully chapter 3 on nanoparticles, the nano revolution. I mean, this went just breezed through Congress. And if I were to say something that is really going to kill us, if we don't learn to get it out of our systems, it is nanoparticles, whether it's aluminum or any other nanoparticle. And our foods have it in it, our clothes have it in it, all the medicines have it in it, toothpaste, cosmetics. I mean, it has gone through the roof. It is a trillion-dollar business to use nanoparticles. So we need to wake up and start learning how these things work and what will combat them, because it is not too late. But it is going to be too late if someone is going to wring their hands and wait for someone to come to save them, or wait for some big expert on TV or wherever to finally tell the truth. We can't wait for that. We've got to really take hold of this. And that's why I'm talking so much on radio shows, is I want people to know that it is not too late, but you have got to start now.
By the way, speaking of which, you have been all over the place giving interviews and lectures. Do you ever worry for your safety? Have you ever been harassed, Ilana?
Yes, I have been attacked with directed energy weapons a few times. Mostly as what I consider, I spent 10 years researching for the Sub Rosa America series that is basically a fictional representation of the history of America since Kennedy's assassination. And, I did spend a lot of time,
By the way, Ilana, I'm sorry to cut you off, but was that the catalyst for you?
Well, the catalyst for me was Kennedy's death. I mean, that was a huge thing. And then remember, Martin Luther King was next, and then Robert Kennedy was next. My generation had our three heroes killed.
Wiped away.
Yes, by the CIA. The CIA was number one.
I agree, yes.
So, but there were others involved as well. But anyway, that was the beginning of my political life, was Kennedy and meeting him in the Rose Garden. But as far as why I spent 10 years researching and 20 years writing the Sub Rosa America series, I mean, it's just unbelievable. I spent 20 years doing that. I was doing a lot of other things.
It is amazing. But one second there. There is another soul here joining us. Did you have a question, Damon?
Yes, I do. I'd like to ask your guests if the government is allowing the ag companies or working with agriculture companies to change the food, so to turn on or turn off different genes in humans to make like superhumans, like super soldiers or like the X-Men's and their stuff, just or future wars or anything like that.
Yes, I think that the GMO foods are being used for multiple purposes. I don't think they're interested in making us super anything other than good slaves. But as to exactly what is in the GMO foods to do that, I think it's mainly to turn us away from nature and to put a bulwark up between us and nature. Certainly they've done well with all the phony foods that people eat and then get very fat from. It's like a lot of people don't even eat real food anymore.
Yeah, they get very sick too.
But this GMO thing is very, I think you're right that it's genetic. And I think that is the main assault. You know, 27 nations refuse to allow GMOs beyond their borders. So hopefully that will grow as well. It's only Americans who seem to be brain dead.
Which people in the government or ag companies, which particular people want to make us slaves by giving the GMO foods and stuff? Because I know we hear people like Alex Jones getting like vague answers like the global elite and blah, blah, blah. It doesn't give solid names like George W. Bush or George Norrie or George Cinta or whoever. I like to have some hardcore names that you point the fingers to, as be this person or that person or George Soros or whatever. It's like, I'm kind of curious that we're going to, figuratively speaking, rise up against those people and say, heck no, we're not going to take this anymore.
Well, I wish it were individuals, but even when you bring up a big gun like George W. Bush, or better yet, George H.W. Bush, these individuals are also tools of vast organizations that are layered around themselves with various people.
Absolutely.
It's like we hear about George Soros, but Soros himself is a tool. So I understand, you know, when people like Alex Jones or whoever are being very generalist. I think more to the point is what I have discovered is that key organizations, and that would include the environmental movement, because I've been, you know, I'm involved in environment now, are co-opted. They are infiltrated and co-opted. And if you study their history, you see that they are turned from having been a very ethical organization into something that is now serving, not serving the people anymore. And that's kind of how I work. I'm looking at, because we are so institution bound, that's just the way our era is. We have so many institutions, and Americans have had a great deal of confidence in these institutions, and all of them are failing us, absolutely failing, and that's because of the infiltration and the co-optation of the mission statement, the mandate by which this organization began. Then you have the media, same thing, co-opted. There was a time probably when the New York Times was honest, but it was certainly before my lifetime.
You always say like the different organizations like Monsantos and so forth, but they're using the so-called chemtrails to basically poison us and try to kill us or make us slaves. But those same people that say that George Bush 41 says we're going to have enslaved Americans or slave the Germans or slave whoever. Those exact same people eat food and stuff. So one of the things, particularly speaking, killing themselves too, if they say this, give this particular chemical to enslave the humans or the Americans.
But
if you look at Bush 41, he's in pretty shitty shape right now because of health reasons. He's like 90, in his 90s and stuff, but I don't think he can do a whole hell of a lot right now and stuff. So, and so it's like, wouldn't they use that, the same technology to, instead of, make the food better so they can live longer to be supermen or superwomen or stuff, instead of having the us to be a quote unquote slaves, and wouldn't it be better to, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Star Trek, but have the Board of the Dominion have like particular like super, the other Jem'Hadar to be like super genetically engineered troops, but to keep them under control, they give them a drug called Quetzal White. Wouldn't they use a similar principle for enslaving us, get us hooked on a particular drug so they can actually control us better than having food and growing the food in like in the Central Valley of California, for example?
Well, everything you're mentioning has already gone on. I don't know what you're saying. Are you saying
nobody's controlling me, basically, what I eat or don't eat or stuff, so.
Huh?
Nobody's putting that figuratively put that gun towards my head and said you have to do X, Y, and Z.
Oh, you're thinking incredibly simplistically. No, believe me, you are influenced. We all are influenced by what's available to us and what the media sell us on. I find that hard to believe that you are that free. I don't think any of us are.
Well, I think you're just enjoying too much of the local weed from Washington State.
My goodness. Thank you very much, Damon, for that call.
Okay. You're welcome.
And mahalo to him. And yes, going back to your book here, Ilana, before we wrap up the conversation here, you did mention 9/11, and I thought that was fascinating because that was the catalyst for me to my awakening, in my opinion. I was just a kid when all of this happened. And I clearly remember these events, and I also remembered getting in trouble in class for raising my hand later on that end of the day after listening to teachers talk endlessly about what's going on. I raised my hand at the end of the afternoon there, and I asked whether or not if it's a possibility that our own government might have had prior knowledge to this.
Well, yeah, I started the entire book out with 9/11. I mean, I didn't just mention it.
I started the whole book
with 9/11 because that was, we got to see a directed energy weapon in action. You saw it did molecular disintegration of everybody and everything. And, Dr. Judy Woods' book, Where Did the Towers Go? I'm a real fan of the book, not so much of Judy Wood, but I am of the book because, it's a fantastic tour de force about 9/11. And she never once mentions what directed energy weapon she thinks it was.
Correct.
Several ideas, and that's good enough.
Have you talked to her personally?
I used to email with her.
Ah, okay.
She said I was a conspiracy theorist and she wanted nothing to do with me.
Well, that's what I was going to tell you. I've had the same sort of interaction with her.
Everybody has.
Yeah, she's a character, but that doesn't mean that she has character. And that's a polite way of putting things, for this program tonight. And by the way, we were talking a little bit about energy and Tesla, and we totally forgot to mention how the LAPD were really the originators for getting this sort of military, weaponry. The LRAD system, the long range acoustic device, or as some people refer to them as sound cannons, those things are quite amazing. I'm not quite sure. Well, not amazing, but quite atrocious rather. I'm not quite sure if you've ever had any experience listening to these sort of devices before.
No, I've never had an LRAD or an ADS, an active
missile
system against me, but I have
had
directed energy weapons against me where they took out my sight. I was absolutely blind.
Oh no.
And they eventually let me have my vision back when I got the message that they were sending me.
Terrible. I had no clue that this happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had
but I'm fine. I mean, there are people really suffering from being targeted, and I am not in that category yet. It's only been a few times where I've been drawn up short. They don't like the direction I'm going in, so they jerk my chain with some sort of, whirligigs in my vision, pain in my chest, like a heart attack kind of thing. They have a variety of ways to get your attention, I guess I'd have to say, but it doesn't stop me from doing it, and I actually don't think they want me to stop doing this because ironically, I think I'm doing them a favor by cluing the public into this technology.
I definitely think you're doing a great job opening minds out there, and like I've mentioned before, you've been all over the place on radio and on the internet giving these discussions, fascinating discussions and lectures, by the way, I must say. And
yeah.
By the way, do you have any sort of new material on the horizon?
Well, I am writing the third book in this series, I hope this will be the final one. This one is on synthetic biology, and it follows directly from what's in the previous two books. I didn't know when I first wrote the first book I didn't know a lot of what is in the second book. And now that I wrote the second book, I now see that I need to write the third book because I see how the synthetic biology follows from this technology, and it will give us insight into how the transhumanism is going to be accomplished. I used to wonder to myself, how are they going to get all the people on the planet to be enhanced, as they like to call it? That's a real euphemism. How are they going to do that? Are they going to get people to come into hospitals, clinics? What? No, they're going to do it remotely. Just right now, and it's we're already being transmuted right now, genetically, it's happening, and the GMO foods are part of it, and the 4G, and the coming 5G, all of this is using the environment as a weapon to change human beings, and particularly the coming generations.
Definitely. With all great technology comes great exploitation, rather. And it's a terrible thing to even conceive. And one other thing I did want to mention to you was, I know you've talked a lot about the shadow government, or as you would call the deep state.
Mm-hmm.
Were you always, well, obviously you were always into politics since you were first fascinated with the whole JFK assassination. I'm just curious to ask you, do you believe that these people in these groups, the shadow government, the Illuminati, do you think these people are really drinking blood?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there have been a few articles recently where they're talking about having the blood of children available to buy for vitality. not just the global elite, but it sounds like they're going to commercialize it. I mean, you know, a lot of these satanic practices are becoming status quo now. And that's kind of how they've done it. This slow boiling frog thing seems to really work, where people don't notice that it's happening. But their children are sexualizing younger. You know, parents don't know where to draw the line with media, and then to see what the media is doing is as the British would say, gobsmacking. I mean, it's just amazing. And we call it freedom. Well, I'm not sure it's freedom, but it is somebody trying to get inside the heads of children. That's for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I definitely know for a fact that there is lots of child trafficking that goes on. Lots of it occurs out here where I live. I live close to a border town. Well, yeah. This is a border town, rather. But I live perhaps 10 to 12 miles at the most from the Mexican border. And I know the troubles of what is coming across here. And I've known about it for a long time. So it's truly a fascinating thing that is happening. And these are all issues that I have known about for over 10 years now, but now, now they're more mainstream, more mainstream.
Well, but the mainstream, remember, the mainstream media is completely controlled. And I never read the New York Times unless I have to, or the Washington Post. I never watch the TV stations. I'm completely immersed in alternative news. And then I have sort of a technique by which I gauge whether it's something that I can go along with or not. We have a lot more variety today, but you need discernment, you need to have discernment. And this is what is lacking in people.
You sound like me now, Ilana.
Huh? I do?
Yes, when I'm talking to different skeptics out there, these skeptical-minded folks, I go into this sort of rant where I talk about discernment and how important it is for those out there listening to our every word to do the homework themselves. Go ahead, Ilana. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you just said it. And it does take an effort. It takes looking at the lifestyle. And, you know, I remember a woman saying to me, yeah, but I just can't do without that TV show.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So there we go. What can I say? If you can't do without a TV show, well, we're in dire straits.
We're enslaved to those 500 channels.
Yeah.
We really are.
And there's no thinking about how sophisticated these people are who are making these programs to keep you watching, watching, watching.
Oh, they know. They know what they're doing to get that serotonin really flooding.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. So I just keep representing what I think people should do. And you know, some of them take it up. Most of them don't. And that's how it is in America. You know, it's a long battle, many battles, long war.
Exactly. As long as they could come home in time for their favorite program and favorite dish, then all is happy in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's certainly tiresome to think of society and the masses and what humanity has become.
My whole life has been about this, right? I mean,
right,
I'm
right.
A 60s person. I've known this stuff for so many years.
Yeah, you've been aware.
And I've been an activist for many years, and mostly through promulgating ideas in the public, giving talks, the Waldorf movement. I felt I gave many years, 16 years to the Waldorf movement because I wanted children to have a childhood, and I wanted them to be in a classroom where natural materials were used and the imagination was highly respected. So, you know, I have found a few things that I think are good for people, and then I just try to represent those. And then I eventually will move on to something else, some other aspect of the great giant elephant in the living room, you know, go and feel the tail for a while and then feel another part of it. I've been very happy doing that because that's my destiny. That's what I came to do. And I, I don't get attached. I don't get attached. I don't get upset with people because they have been the objects of experiments by sophisticated PhDs since the 50s. And the Nazis, you know, the paperclip Nazis.
Yes.
I mean, you know, those were very bright men. And they knew exactly what they were doing. I for one, feel the Third Reich moved here. And we are now facing fascism. And it's time to wake up and do something or just lie down and let them have it.
That's right. That's IlanaFreeland.com. Ladies and gentlemen, author of Under an Ionized Sky, From Chemtrails to Space Fence Lockdown. And I do want to thank you tremendously for being a part of the program, Ilana. You've been a joy to talk to.
Oh, great, Michael. Thanks so much for the freewheeling openness and expansion of the program.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. But before I do let you go, I want to let you just say a few things if you'd like the final word before I let you part ways here.
Well, just to my prayer and my hope is that people will really consider what consciousness is. It is a lot more than just meditating or praying. It's living life in a way where you're inquiring and really looking into things and becoming responsible for your time, for your nation, for what is going on here. This is what true freedom is. It is not free from, it's the freedom to be an adult and take responsibility. As I always say, this is my watch and I will keep it.
Amazing. Well, I do want to thank you once again for being a part of the program, and I will definitely talk to you again in the very near future.
All right. Bye, Michael.
All right, Ilana. Take care and good night. And there she goes, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you did like that discussion, and when I return, the second guest will join us here live and direct. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. And welcome back to the program. Hello, everybody. How's it going? This is Michael Deacon, and we are indeed live right now on the TuneIn Radio app. Search End of Days, and you'll find the 24/7 network. Also, hello to the Fringe FM network out there rebroadcasting this. Hello to those lovely souls out there. Now, here we are. On the final stretch of the program, this is where we let our hair down and get right into all sorts of things. I certainly do appreciate all of you out there for being here with me tonight. I love seeing all those pretty faces out there, and even the ugly ones. We are all one. That number is 760-332-8724. Don't just sit there behind your keyboards or mobile devices. Put them to use. Call in with your thoughts and opinions anytime. I'd love to talk to you. Now let's bring on the next soul. Nathan, are you alive?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me on.
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Amazing. I'm doing amazing. I can't complain. Doing good. Having a great time doing the program here, and I'm just fascinated with the photos you took and that sketch you did. I want to talk about all these great things, but before we do, can you tell the listeners a few things about yourself, Nathan?
Yeah, well, my name's Nathan Tafoya, or Nathaniel Tafoya is my full name. I was born and raised in Southern California, and I currently reside in Utah now. I'm a contactee, and I've been in contact with extraterrestrials ever since I was a little boy. And even to this day, man, it's pretty much going on for the, you know, as long as I'm here on Earth. So, but, you know, this was, something that was with me pretty much, I believe, since birth.
Yeah.
But my first recalling memory was about at the age of 2 with a physical interaction with some extraterrestrials.
That's amazing. And Nathan, you don't recall, or do you recall, the first time you actually saw perhaps lights in the sky or perhaps a visitor at the end of your bed? Which one was it, Nathan?
Well, the first recalling encounter was a physical interaction between two gray entities. I call them the Wise Grays, and I made some illustrations for you of some different beings that I've encountered. There's quite a few. But these Wise Grays, what I would call, they have they're a little different because they're not the typical grays that you'd be accustomed to and seeing in, like, movies and artwork and photos and stuff like that, which I have definitely encountered. That's, they're there quite a bit of the time during my physical contact experiences. But these were two, what I refer to as Wise Grays. They're a form of gray, but I don't know exactly where they come from. I never really asked them that. It didn't seem important. But right. These two individuals came in my room. I was playing, you know, being really young at the age of two, I was playing with, like, blocks and my stuffed animals and stuff like that, Tinker Toys and all that when I was really little. And I was in my room in Torrance, California. That's where I was born. And these two Wise Grays, they have these purple robes with, like, a gold trim around the hood and through the center of the robe. They appeared through my walls. So they just kind of, how can I put it in a better terms? They just basically materialized through the wall. It wasn't like 100% full materialization. It was almost like,
yes,
almost like it was like a holographic image, but then it started to become more materialized. And so I was in my room and these two gray, Wise Grays came into my room, and this was my first ever, conscious experience that I had. It was quite neat because,
yeah. By the way, how old were you, Nathan, when this happened, if you don't mind me asking?
I was 2 years old.
Damn, and you recall this at 2 years old.
Oh, I have a really good memory. I can remember my first doctor's shot, my first haircut.
So you have the mind of an elephant. You remember everything.
I don't know how an elephant thinks, but maybe.
Amazing. Yeah, well, that's incredible, but... Yeah, I've talked to plenty of people out there who recall these very early experiences. Some would even say traumatic experiences. And prior to these incidents in your life, were you, well, at 2 years old, you really have no prior insight to any sort of alien, UFO sort of agenda in your mind at that time. Your consciousness is pretty much absent of any of these sort of things. So it's kind of pointless for me to even ask you if you were even influenced by anything outside of this. But yes, go on. My goodness.
Well, I'll explain about it because they communicate telepathically. So we had actually a conversation. I can kind of go into detail because so as I become older, I start getting more of this download and this information that comes to surface over time. So when I was at the age of two, I didn't know any differently. I thought this was completely normal. You know what I mean? I mean, what 2 year old or, you know, even young child at that age that's new to this life, you know, doesn't know any differently. So it wasn't startling. It wasn't frightening or anything like that. If anything, the bond between the two Wise Grays and I felt like family, and that's how I've always felt throughout my whole entire contacts. And maybe to back it up just a little bit further, and I think maybe there's a reason involved in all these contact experiences, because first of all, my mother had a really difficult time to conceive children. I'm her only child.
Understood. Understood.
She tried having children multiple times and just couldn't have children. Couldn't happen. So she went to her primary care physician, and, you know, he even said, you know, her body's anatomy makes it very difficult for her to conceive children. So, you know, I'm kind of like her blessing in a sense, and, you know, I'm glad to be a part of here. But to be a little bit more in depth is during life experiences and stuff like that. You know, I'm 38 years old, but I feel a lot older and wiser inside.
You're an old soul.
But yeah, I think I've had a lot of life experience, not just here on Earth, but
maybe a past life.
Past lives on different planets, possibly. I don't know. I've never done any regression hypnosis or anything like that.
By the way, Nathan, have you ever told your, or asked your mother, rather, if perhaps she ever experienced anything of this nature? Many times before, those who have been contacted or abducted to a certain degree, usually their parents have had the same experience, rather.
Yeah, I've talked to her about things. She's seen, you know, a couple things, but nothing to the extent of what I've gone through. Same with my father. I've talked to him and he's had a couple experiences, but I don't know as far as what lines it goes down to. I think this is more from my feeling and my communication with him. This is something. So at the age of two, well, for instance, my mom, she could, basically, if you've heard of astral travel, she could basically jump out of her body and travel whenever she wanted. And as a young kid, she'd always tell her mom this, and her mom's like, you can't say anything about this in public or anything like that because people will think you're nuts. And they actually took her when she was really young to a specialist to find out, you know, if she was, you know, had some type of disorder or something like that. And the doctor said, no, she's completely fine.
She's completely healthy. Yeah. And this is what's interesting to me, that lots of people that have been abducted or contacted to a certain degree, these individuals, they possess more of this ESP type of ability, this extraterrestrial consciousness ability, I like to label it as. They're more, I guess, susceptible to astral project and have more of lucid dreams or even have precognition.
Yeah, and I do experience that.
Yeah, see what I mean? Right.
Well, I'll tell you about that Asia too. So, during that time when we were interacting and playing together, not like playing with toys, but this was like a telepathic communication and download. So the reason why they came down was to check on me to see if I was okay. And immediately when they were interacting with me, it was like I've known them for a very long time. So that's why I consider them family. And I think this was part of my agreement and my life experience here on Earth was to take part in this experience and pick my parents as well. But also to interact with a lot of people. But so what took place there was they were checking on me to make sure that I was okay and seeing how everything was going. During this conversation, they were telling me the importance of why they were here, not just to check on me to make sure I was okay, but to let me know that, during my life here on Earth that I will be encountering them quite often throughout my life, pretty much until the day I move on to the next life cycle. But they were trying to let me know that I have these abilities to be able to be telepathic, which I really do. And to all your listeners and everybody has the ability to be telepathic. It's just something that's not exercised within normal society. But it's really easy to be able to understand how it works. So everybody has what's called an inner voice. So if you were to say your name without saying it aloud, you can hear it yourself. So there's a few different ways how telepathy works. You can use your inner voice. You can also use that inner voice, but use emotion and feeling behind that and project it outwards. And that's a form of telepathy. So like, anytime we get frustrated or anything like that, and we don't speak out loud because we might not want to offend somebody, we're using that telepathic sense, but we're directing it at ourselves. We've never really been taught how to project it outwards. And people aren't susceptible to understanding and receiving that form of communication just because it's not been properly used and practiced on a regular basis. So that was something that they informed me of during this visitation, that, you know, I had the ability to reach out to them and communicate with them and also receive communications through channeling messages and downloads and all that stuff, because that's how telepathy works.
It's fascinating, really. I'm not sure if you get this yourself, but sometimes I'll have an issue or a problem that I'm trying to solve, and I can't really figure out the proper route to take the proper answer with, rather. And out of nowhere, sometimes I'll just get the answer out of nowhere, almost like a download.
And that happens, and believe it or not, the way how you may feel frustrated or you can't find the answer, and you're sometimes these entities, it may not be extraterrestrial, it could be interdimensional or your spirit guide or whatnot. I mean, to be honest with you, anything paranormal, extraterrestrial, ghosts, interdimensional entities, your spirit guides, they all work in conjunction with similar frequencies. So there's no separation between any of those. I mean, and I can go into further detail, but I think that might, you know, that could be a later conversation, because I really do have tons of information for people. But so to be back on, or if you have a question, feel free to say something.
Oh, go ahead.
But so during this conversation at the age of two, my grandmother, my mom's mom, was visiting from the state of Utah, because both of my parents were born and raised out here in Utah. So she was visiting, and the weird thing about this interaction and it, that was taking place in my room, was it seemed to last for a very long time. But the weird part about it was my mother wasn't going down the hallway to check on me in my room, nor was my grandmother. And during this conversation, they were telling me, you know, that I'm going to be having a lot of interactions with them, and this, I've had so many physical interactions, it's not even funny.
Who,
I mean,
by the way, who were these entities? Where were they from? Did they tell you?
You know, at the age of two, I didn't even.
Oh, well, okay, you were two.
So, right. I mean, so, and that's also the thing. It seemed like a long time, but I don't, what 2 year old or even five or 7 year old has the aspect of time. I mean, my 7 year old son thinks 5 minutes is 5 seconds, you know, but I mean, you don't really get that relation of
the better, time. And, right. The better question would be, are these entities the ones who first abducted you, or are they still currently in communication with you?
Yeah, they are. And I really don't like the word abduction, because I find it abrasive. I mean, it's just a common term that the ufology community has used. This was, you know, it's never been against my will.
Correct. Yes.
But, you know, it's more like taken aboard or invited. That's kind of how it is. But, and we'll get further into that. But so what had taken place when this interaction was going on, it seemed like for a little bit, but my mother and my grandmother wasn't walking down the hall to check on me, see if I was okay. So I asked them a specific question, because my grandma was really important to me. So I asked them telepathically, I said, is it okay if I introduce you to my grandma? So I walked into the kitchen, and that's where they were. They were cooking dinner for that evening, and it was later on in the afternoon. I don't know what time it was. I couldn't even comprehend, you know, time at that point in time. But so it was weird when I walked in there. It was like they were just so occupied on doing that, it seemed like out of the ordinary. It's like I walked in there and I like nudged them, and then they finally were like coherent of me being there. And I'm like, Grandma, I need to introduce you to my friends. And so, you know, and I could talk fairly decent at a 2 year old. I think I was a little bit, you know, above average as a 2 year old, even though I have severe dyslexia. But so I grabbed my grandmother and said, come here, I want to introduce you to my friends. So she's like, okay. So I grabbed her hand and I walked her into my room.
Wow.
And, when we got in there, I said, you see my friends? They're right over here at the wall, by my crib area. And so she looks it in. She's like, I don't see my, I don't see him anywhere. But here's the thing. When I asked them to do that, they gave me this specific message, and it was, a child's mind and consciousness is a lot stronger than it is as an adult, so they might not see what you see. And so, and the reason that this message didn't really resonate or make sense at the time, I said, okay, well, I'm going to grab her anyway. And the way I look at it now as an adult, and maybe you guys can reflect on this, is when you're a child, you don't have your blinders on. You're open to every little thing in this world. It's like the most clarity that you'll have entering this life is when you're a little child. You don't have any inabilities to think outside the box. I mean, you're there willing to experience everything. You think you can do everything. You have the fondness of an imagination. Everything's limitless. So I understand that. And if people are wanting to make contact, which I can also help guide people on how to do that, but maybe not everybody would be ready to do that, or it might not be the time for them to do that. And I can explain that too. But so if you reflect back on your childhood and you think about that, if you have a child's mind when you're wanting to communicate with either the other side, extraterrestrials, your spirit guides or anything like that, I would suggest all the audience members and people out there that are open to this, have that child's mindset where you're free. You don't have any limitations. You're willing to understand that you do have this ability to experience this, but it's up to that individual to have full clarity and not put any hindering on their ability to achieve something. So I think that's important. So that was kind of what took place at the age of two. They were telling me that I was going to have interactions. They had that profound message, which now I finally, it really resonates and makes a lot of sense. And I don't know if that makes sense to you, but it makes a lot of sense to me.
It totally does, actually. It's fascinating that you went through all these sort of things, and it reminds me to ask you if perhaps you experienced maybe something that would be considered paranormal, anything of that nature. Did you see any kind of apparitions at all growing up or in your late to early adulthood, rather?
Yeah, well, that was just my first interaction with the wise gray extraterrestrials, the first time I met them. So let me skip to about age four, because this is kind of like a little paramount stage in my development years. So I didn't really have a lot of contact time until about age five, but here's what took place about age four. At the age of four, I had a really big internal contemplation going on through my thoughts. And this thought that was continuing to repeat itself for a little while when I was four, I mean, it lasted for a while. I started having confusion about my real parents, if they were my real parents, if you know what I mean. Like, I didn't feel like they were my real family. And I think that's kind of a complex thought process for a four-year-old to have, but this is something that I was internalizing and trying to figure out, because, you know, I knew they were my real family, you know, being born from them, but they didn't feel like a family at that point in time. I was still like in this processing stage of trying to figure things out. Like, I could recognize the physical side, but I didn't feel like I was always loved, and I really had a strong bond with my family, but there was something that just didn't sit well at the time. Like, it feel like they were my real family. So that's
interesting.
Why,
yes. You definitely feel like you're not from here, don't you?
Yeah, I do. This body and everything feels really heavy.
Right.
And to be honest with you, I love every human being and everything, but I think there's a lot of, wasted time and emotions on stupid things. And that's just kind of our environment and our society, how we've been brought up. There's a lot more to life. If you have an open heart and an open mind to do good and do love, you know? And,
yeah. I tell people all the time.
It's all about service to others. It's never about service to self.
I tell people all the time to let go of that anger and hate that they harnessed in their hearts. You're never going to be happy in life.
honestly, that all that emotion and stuff is internalized with an individual. It's not with, you know, it can be incorporated with other people, but it's usually about first you have to love yourself before you can love somebody else.
That's true.
But so that's what happened at the age of 4. And during that, you know, from 2, 3, 4, after that 2-year-old interaction, you know, things weren't really happening with the extraterrestrials until about the age of 5. And this is when a heck of a lot more physical interactions, started to occur. So how these interactions would occur is always like in the middle of the night. I would get this internal telepathic message or feeling or voice inside me. And it was almost like someone plucking guitar strings, you know, you could just feel what it was saying. And, they would say, you know, it's time to wake up. It's time to go. And as soon as that, I would get that message, I'd be up. And the next thing I would have would be like sometimes 3 or 5 gray extraterrestrials. Now, these are the typical grays that you see on the internet and stuff like that. And I've actually drawn a picture of a gray entity, and it's got like a moon in the background.
I like it. Yeah. That's a great photo.
Thank you. But that's, those are what I consider the worker bees. So there's different forms of contact, like those wise grays, those from the age of 2, those were like an immediate contact source. Those were like the, people that I would actually communicate with aboard the craft and through interactions. Same with the tall whites. I have a group of extraterrestrials that I drew, and there's some symbols up on the top right-hand corner that I remember seeing in the craft and through stuff, and I'll explain that. But so these worker grays, they initiate the contact experience when you're in a physical state. So what they do is, you know, when I get this internal message, it wasn't for those grays that were surrounding me by my bed, the 3 to 5 of them. This was from the tall white being that I have in the drawing, sometimes a mantis being or those wise grays. And so that's where the internal communication through telepathy would work, was with the main contact source. So aboard a craft or during these physical interactions, you have what are called the worker grays, or what I call them, the worker grays. And they all have specific roles, not a lot of interaction telepathically with them at all. They're just there to assist you boarding the craft. So that's what they would do is, you know, I get this message, they'd be around me. Next thing I know, it's like a blank slate. I don't remember it until I'm on the craft. So I don't know what took place. If I was, I don't know how I got aboard the craft, but I was on the craft. And so what they would do is they, you know, they would initiate that contact and get me aboard the craft. And then they would direct me to my contact source. Most of the time it was the tall white or the wise gray, and a couple interactions with the mantid type beings, not a lot through them.
By the way, in your illustration, it seems like you're hiding behind the door in the drawing there.
Yeah, and that's an experience that I had at the age of 14, and we'll get into that really quick.
Oh my God. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's okay. So what took place was, when I was aboard the craft about, you know, from age 5 to about age 8, this was a learning process for me. This was to enhance my telepathic communication skills that I kind of was naturally born with. They also told me a lot about how I could read energies in the room, which I really can. Like, I can go into different environments and feel energy, like if it's weighted down or if it's livelied up. I can feel tension easily. It's like cutting a knife. I don't even have to know the person. I can walk into an area and I can tell if there's tension already without even observing the people in there. I can just feel that energy. And also another thing that's actually been really successful, well, really neat for me and successful in my career life, is being able to understand a person's true intent and who they really are within the first 10 to 15 seconds of knowing them.
You sound like me now. I do those calls all the time, and I unfortunately I seem to have a track record on that.
Well, it's neat because I can call someone's BS right off the bat before they even, you know, too. And I can't really explain on to teach somebody that. It's just something that
you can't teach that. That's something you really cannot teach.
But so they were talking to me, you know, they were kind of enhancing the stuff that I naturally had, and but more of the telepathic stuff, and kind of letting me know that I could feel energies and stuff like that. And I've had like some future premonitions of certain things that have taken place throughout my life. So they were talking to me about that, but a lot of it was these worker bee grays would be instructed by this tall white, which is the one with the blue eyes, and it's kind of luminescent white. That was a lot of main contact source with that individual extraterrestrial. And they would escort, he would direct these worker grays and have them escort me into this area of the craft where these almost holographic screens would come into play. And my job, this was a learning experience. So this is where the symbols come in. So I would be standing in front of a screen, and these symbols, I would have to learn these symbols because each symbol had a meaning behind the symbols. So I had to learn that. And for the life of me, I remember the symbols, but I don't know what they mean. Maybe it will be activated at a later time, but as of right now, I can't remember what they are, what the meanings behind them are, but I remember the actual symbol itself, and that's why I have drawn a couple of those on that diagram too.
Yes, and so, great drawings, by the way.
Well, thank you.
Gotta praise you again. I really liked these drawings here. Do you have any more, by the way?
I'm creating more. The ones that so it's kind of hard for, to be honest with you, when I start drawing like things from my experience, there's a lot of emotional stuff that goes on with drawing it. Like
that's another question I was going to ask you actually. And it goes back to a calendar that I saw when I was about 10, 12 years old when I was in, I think I might have been in San Diego. I forget what store I was in, but there was some sort of calendar. And it was showing people being abducted, and I know you don't like that word, but
no, it's okay.
They were showing people being taken from their bedrooms, and you would see them on these medical examining rooms, rather, and and there was like a pre-warning to this calendar that said people that have had these experiences will experience some sort of traumatic sort of some sort of episode, it said, and I was thinking about that before bringing you on. If perhaps some of these things perhaps trigger maybe some sort of memory in your mind, and we're getting that answer now.
Yeah, so, you know, when I was really young, like at the age of 2 and stuff, it wasn't like anything to be afraid of. But as I became older and my blinders started to develop a little bit, I started to get introduced to like scary things, you know, like when I was 5, me and my friends would dress up in our Halloween costumes.
Sure.
And play hide and go seek at nighttime with the lights all turned off, and we'd play hide and go seek that way. And, you know, I started getting introduced to that. And I think at the age of 5 was the first time I saw my first scary movie, which is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, excellent.
My mother was like, total anti, you know, horror films or anything like that. She didn't want me to have anything to do with that.
By the way, were you raised in a religious household, rather?
No, I wasn't. So my mother was raised LDS, and then she quickly got out of that religion because of some things that didn't sit right with her as a young kid. They really put her on the spot, and she wanted nothing to do with that.
You gotta be really careful in terms of religion, nowadays. If, I mean, I can't speak for myself, but I have friends who are fathers, and the whole How do you introduce religion to your child sort of conversation does get brought up to me, and I'm always thinking, well, I don't have a kid. I can't really make that call for you. But it is interesting to...
Well, I don't even force that upon my son. You know, and that's kind of the environment how I was growing up. I mean, my dad was, you know, Catholic as a young little boy. I think he was born into it. I think a lot of individuals don't have a choice. They're kind of born into it. You know what I mean?
Forced.
And it's kind of expected amongst that family and that experience. So, you know, my parents were really, and I thank them for that, for allowing me to choose my own path as far as what I wanted to believe in.
Yeah, to have that freedom of thought.
You know, later on in my life, I did decide to get baptized as Christian, but it wasn't to join the Christian church. This whole part of me doing that was for the personal relationship. You know, I believe in Jesus Christ, but there's... I believe in source, or if you want to call it God, or, you know, the creator. That's my real relationship. I still have a relationship with Christ, but, you know, there's a lot more of that. And I've been getting more spiritually upgraded throughout my life too, especially recently. But, to get back on track. So you know, I was learning about the symbols and stuff, and I was also learning about mental focused energy. So they would also take me aboard, you know, when I was in the craft learning the stuff on the screens with the symbols. There was also another exercise where I'd have to do like focused energy, applying my mental thoughts and projecting them and actually moving like an orb and stuff like that. They would want to see me move it from an area to another area and back and forth. Now, it's weird because I remember doing that, but I have no abilities here on Earth to be able to bend a spoon or anything like that. And this has to do with the frequency of the craft and everything like that. and their technology, which I can't even explain because I don't even understand it. But, so that's kind of what took place. But also during these images on the screen, they would actually have me be looking at different outcomes of Earth. So I would see it in its like flourish state, and then I would see it start to deplete from natural disasters, pollution, nuclear war, all this kind of scenarios. They wanted to see how my emotional reaction would be to see these certain events take place during this imaging on this holographic type screen. And that was a troubling time for me to see that, because I saw, you know, our home starting to get depleted from pollution. I saw wars outbreak from people, nuclear explosions, bad earthquakes, volcanoes, tornadoes, hurricanes, you name it. I mean, they put it there. And this was to see how my emotional response would be during this. And this happened from like about the age from 5 to 8. And mind you, at this time, I had never, ever once told my parents what was going on during this time. The first time I ever mentioned anything, and this was because at the age of 8, my mom bought the book Communion by Whitley Strieber, and I'm sure you're familiar with the cover art.
Certainly, yeah.
So I had walked downstairs, and I noticed her reading this book. Immediately, I got very upset with her. I said, you need to get that book out of the house right now. I don't want it in here. Throw it away. Get it out. And I was really upset with her, and she's like, what is wrong with you? It's just a book. I'm like, I don't like it. I don't want it in the house. And she's like, why don't you like it? I said, it's because what's on the cover of that book, I don't want it in here. And this was like the first time where I started to get, you know, a little bit more fear-based in that. Not that any experience was ever negative, but if you can only imagine being woken up in the middle of the night saying it's time to go, and then as soon as you open up your eyes, you have 3 to 5 gray extraterrestrial beings in your room. How do you respond to that? It's not like they just knock on your door or ring the doorbell and say, we're here, it's time to go. It may seem intrusive for that experience, but when you're dealing with entities that can alter time and space and gravity and stuff like that, they can go through different, what I call a lot of people will say interdimensional. I say transdimensional because they can jump from one dimension to another or whatnot. And I think that's more of the proper term than interdimensional, because interdimensional to me sounds like they're stuck in a certain dimension where, you know, they can't really move into a different density. So that started to take place and my mom's like, why are you so upset? I said, it's because of that. It's what's on the front of the book. I don't like it. I don't want it in the house. So she started to say, what's going on? Why are you feeling this way? And I said, Mom, I just don't want it in the house. She's like, no, tell me why. I said, because they keep visiting me. And she's like, why do they keep visiting you? And at the age of, I said, I don't know. They just keep visiting me. And I couldn't put anything to word into words at the age of 8 to be like what I'm telling you now. It just, you know, it was just something that happened. I couldn't control it. I didn't know when it was going to happen. Sometimes it would happen, you know, 4 nights in a row, and then it would stop for a couple days, and then another 3 nights in a row, and then it would stop for a month, and then next thing you know, it's another couple of days. I mean, this went on from like age 5 all the way up to about age 15. And so that's the first time I ever really told my mom about that, and I was very limited on what I said because I couldn't really put it into words. And so a little bit later, she bought me this book called The Boy from the UFO, which I found kind of weird. And this book's a fictional-based book, but I don't know how the author put it in there, but when you have physical experiences, and maybe some of your listeners are contactees or have had these encounters, I don't know, but... And, you know, I would encourage you, if you have questions, ask me. I'm here. I'm an open book. This is why I'm doing it. I'm new to sharing my experiences to the world. And the reason I'm doing this is because I've had a lot of time to digest and understand what's taking place in my life and how beneficial it is, because it's a transition to a transformational stage. And so it's all positive, but it's very difficult to
Right. And by the way, when did you refer to this sort of multidimensional travel that these grays do? You referred to it as something else right now.
Transdimensional.
Okay. That's what you said. And it's interesting that you did say that, because there are strange, hidden portals in the Earth's magnetic field, by the way. This has already been confirmed by NASA a long time ago, except that they refer to it as X points.
Or ley lines or something like that.
Electron diffusion regions, rather.
And yeah.
These things are very unpredictable, but they do exist, and they open and close unexpectedly. And perhaps your gray friends there, maybe they have some sort of technology to hone in on this sort of ability that has them jumping in and out of your room there.
Well, see, the weird thing about that, so, like, at the age of 5, my parents built this house in Tribuco Canyon, California. It's in Orange County. If you guys want to look it up on Google Maps,
it's a beautiful place, Orange County.
Huh?
It's a beautiful location, Orange County.
Oh, yeah. The address is number 1 Windy Ridge Road, and it looks like a castle. It's a really cool house, but we built this house from ground up. We had this guy that actually designed the pool that had designed all the rock work for the Indiana Jones ride.
Oh, wow.
My dad was in the telecommunications industry when I was growing up, so he did really well financially. But my parents got a divorce, and that kind of goes into, you know, as I was getting older, you know, I noticed, you know, when my parents were separated, my dad was kind of doing his thing when he was divorced. And, you know, so I'd be at home all the time riding my dirt bikes with my friends. I mean, we had huge area of property. I grew up racing dirt bikes and surfing and all that kind of stuff.
Sounds like a pretty good childhood then.
Oh, man, I had an awesome childhood.
Had a great time,
Yeah, I wish I could give my son that type of childhood, but he has a pretty good one, just not all the cool toys. Well, he has a lot of toys, but not like dirt bikes or anything yet.
Maybe he doesn't really need dirt bikes though.
Oh, out here in Utah, we got tons of riding area. It's a big desert out here.
Oh, well, you're in Utah. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we built this big house, and that's where that drawing comes into play where I'm hiding behind the door. And I'm glad you picked that up. So.
Yeah, let's talk about that because, I mean, there is a clear fear in that indication by drawing yourself behind that door.
Well, I'll tell you the whole story. So this was like an actual, like, full-on conscious recalling event. I mean, I was alert and I was awake when this happened. So at about the age of 14 is when I met my first girlfriend, and we were dating for a couple years. So, you know, but by the age of 15, I had my driver's permit, but I didn't have my driver's license. So the way that we would be able to see each other was either her dad would drop, you know, her parents would drop her off at my house, or my parents would pick her up and we'd go to the beach, or I'd go hang out with her or whatnot. But a lot of our communication was over the phone. So, and I don't know if you noticed in that picture, but the phone's on the bed.
Oh, yes, yes.
Off the hook. So it was about, I would say about 12 or 1230 at night. And we would talk all hours of the night, you know, and we would actually sometimes fall asleep on the phone.
On the phone, just because we'd
be up all night long talking.
Yeah.
So it was about 12 o'clock at night, and we were talking, and I think she was either dozed off, or what had took place, they had done something to where she couldn't hear anything or anything like that. But what took place at that time is I was talking to her and I was kind of nodding off a little bit, but I was still awake. And I said, wait a second. I hear my friends coming up on their dirt bikes in the middle of the night. And I said, hold on real quick. I'm going to see if, you know, they're going to be coming up the hill, because I thought I heard dirt bikes coming up, but it wasn't getting any louder. It was like a low pitch hum, but I could hear like dirt bikes coming up the hill. So I put the phone down on the bed and I walked, to the door, and my door was closed. As soon as I grabbed the door handle started opening up on itself. Now this is weird, and this is where that mental projection stuff on the craft that I was talking about. I didn't hear like any hands grab the door handle. It just started opening up. So I didn't hear any contact from that door handle being opened. It just started, I could see that handle starting to twist and the door slowly starting to open up. And so the way my room, and I get goosebumps every time I talk about this, because it was really, it was intense. It was scary, and it wasn't bad or anything. It was just, I didn't expect this to happen, because this wasn't a normal way of things to really occur. Usually it was in the middle of the night when I would be woken up by this internal voice saying, you know, it's time to wake up and time to go. So as that door started to open up, I saw these four long gray fingers wrap around the door. And as it was pushing open, my automatic reaction was to hide behind the door. And the way my room was set up, it kind of had like this contoured, like little quarter moon shape that when I was young, I'd hide behind that because I could open up the door all the way and I'd be totally, you know, covered by the door when it was fully open. So right. No one could see you until they finally found out my spot. So,
yeah,
that's funny. You know, and so that was my automatic reaction was to hide behind the door, because I was shocked, you know, saw the door opening up right when I was grabbing the handle, and I've never experienced that whatsoever.
That's scary.
Yeah, scary. And then on top of it, I saw these four long grayish white fingers wrap around the door as the door's opening up. And I don't know if you've ever been so scared in your life where you try to scream out loud, but nothing comes out. That's exactly what happened. Like, I tried to scream as loud as I could as soon as I saw those three extraterrestrials walk in the room.
And this wasn't a dream, by the way, correct?
Oh, no. This was full on me getting off the bed, walking to the door. This was no dream whatsoever. So as they came in the room, I tried to scream. Nothing came out. It was like they paralyzed my vocal cords, so nothing could come out. And my dad was sleeping in his bedroom. And I mean, it was, you know, 12:30 at night. And as soon as I started to scream, that's when they grabbed my arm. They grabbed my left arm first and then my right arm, and I froze, but I was trying to push back. I was resisting this whole experience when they grabbed me. Like, I was so in shock because I didn't get any communication at this point. It was just like a random event that wasn't kind of consistent with all the other experiences that I had, you know, growing up.
It seems like they're very forceful.
No, it wasn't forceful at all. I was the one who was being trying to force them to resist, you know, to resist. I was scared, you know, I didn't know how to cope with that at the time, because it wasn't like something like relatively, just like waking up from a sleep and then being surrounded, and then next thing you're on the craft. This was like them entering my room as I'm walking out the door to go see if my friends are coming up on their dirt bikes. But this was all that sound, I believe, was put into my auditory system to think that they were coming up.
I see.
And so they grabbed me and I tried to push back. The next thing I know is I'm sitting upright on my bed, completely sweaty, pins and needles from my head to my toes, my whole body, like my whole body fell asleep. And my whole body was vibrating. My phone was down on the bed. It's now 3:00 in the morning. So I had a lot of missing time. And like, I was in my bed and I was awake and I was sitting upright. Like, I don't remember how I got on my bed. I'm freaking out. I'm like shaking and vibrate, you know, have this vibration filling with all this pins and needles. I'm sweating profusely and I'm freaking out because what seemed just like 2 seconds ago, I was at the door and I remember these beings coming, these extraterrestrial grays coming in my room and grabbing me. And I don't have any recollection of that time within that time period at when it was 3:00 in the morning. So my first thing that I did was I ran, I turned on every single light in my room, my stereo, my Nintendo, my TV, and I'm sitting there freaking out. You know, I'm trying to, you know, gain composure. It took me literally like an hour and a half to finally settle down to like fall asleep. And here's the weird thing is like, as soon as I fell asleep, I had a dream state contact, and this is how most of my continued contacts have occurred, is through either a channeling message, dream state contact, or the UFO sightings that I've seen. And a lot of my dream state contacts actually feel physical, so I can't really decipher either of them. But so as soon as I fell asleep, instantly I had the communication with that tall white in the picture that I drew. And it was like I was walking down this tunnel or this corridor, and it seemed like it was underground or something like that. And the tall white appeared in my dream, and he said to me, he's like, he was very like empathetic and trying to, you know, show me as much love. And I felt that. And he said, I'm really sorry for you being so distraught and upset about this. You know, and freaking out, because they didn't know I was still awake, or they didn't have that, you know, cause it was late at night. Usually I would fall asleep really early, like 10:00 at night, but they said to me, this is going to be it's going to be a while before you have physical contact again. And the reason for this being is it's time for us to stop doing this right now, because you need time to process this information as you develop as an adult. And that was my last recalling physical interaction that I had. And the reason they said this is because that was my adolescent stage. So, you know, when you're growing up, and everybody's experienced that's, you know, older, is when you reflect back on certain ages that you were, you have this different mindset. And so this was all for me to digest and absorb and take in, you know, to see how I was going to take this you know, growing up into my adult years, was I going to put this in a fear-based environment for myself where I would be afraid of them and do that? Now, granted, I'll tell you this, to be honest with you, when if anybody has ever had physical interactions with an ET, I don't know many people that do or have really honestly came out, and anybody that I ever try to communicate with as a contactee or someone that's been abducted, I do never get one response from those individuals, ever. The only person that I can say that I actually talk to and communicate with is Robert Vandenbroek. And he's really legitimate, so he's a real deal too. And it's frustrating because when you have these experiences, it's hard to share this with others because there's a lot of negative criticism through different peers and stuff like that. They think you're making stories up.
Yeah, they think you're crazy. Right.
I've done a few radio shows now, and I've seen comments, and people will put some pretty sometimes negative stuff on there. And the nice thing about, and I actually have, sharing my experiences more in detail, I just barely put out on YouTube. So you can check it out at Nathaniel Tafoya if you type that in on YouTube, and you should see those two videos, and I'm going to put a lot more in there. But I get criticism for that, but I have no problem, commenting back, and then I never see a negative comment back there ever after I comment, because I'm not going to be like, your typical researcher or anything like that. Not saying that they're bad, but they think they have all this all figured out, and they do all this legwork and research, but the people that really understand what's really going on are the people that are experiencing this phenomenon and these experiences with these extraterrestrials.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
So, I mean, when you're in physical presence with, an extraterrestrial, it's overwhelming. It's normal to be afraid, and I'll tell you the reason why you feel afraid. It's because you're dealing with a different frequency of energy. I mean, it's not like communicating with a human. You're dealing with a different entity that has a way different way of communicating, which ultimately when you're in their presence, their energetic field is a lot more intensive. The way they project things, the way they look at you, and you look in their eyes, they know more about you than you even know about yourself. And you cannot lie to them because they already know exactly everything about you as soon as they look into your eyes.
Yeah, it's very interesting. MIT created a special headset that allows you to communicate with a computer system basically by simply thinking what you want to say. It's basically reading your mind without even opening your mouth. Kind of sounds like telepathy.
It's called coherent thought sequencing is basically what it is.
Yeah, it picks up the neuromuscular signals.
But, so, I mean, when you're dealing with that, it's natural to become afraid. I mean, it's literally like undergoing every single type of emotion you could go through all at one point in time. So it's really overwhelming.
Very overwhelming. That's exactly what it sounds like.
Very overwhelming. And a lot of this, and maybe you've interviewed a few people that have had a lot of experiences, but you'll notice even with myself, I still have a lot of blocked areas that I can't remember everything. I remember details of certain experiences, and more pop up, at the right time as I'm able to, it's like they unlock certain things when they feel it's important for me to know it. But I mean, with that missing time from like 12:30 to 3 o'clock, I still don't remember what had taken place. And kind of move back when I was an adolescent from my teen years. This is when physical scans and stuff started taking place. This is when they were more interested. I had learned everything that I needed to know about telepathy, and I'm, in energetics and thought projection and mental projection and stuff with objects. But when I was an adolescent, this is when the physical, checkups on my anatomy and stuff like that. I remember at times, you know, I'd wake up in the morning and I'd have these marks on my body, like, blood vessels being popped or like a reddish mark on my arms or on my back, on my inner thigh. And it was an abrasive. Actually, recently, I was going to send you a drawing, but it was on a paper towel because I was at work. And so I'm a bus operator. I drive public transportation for the state of Utah. And I was on my break and I just started to sketch. And I, you know, a lot of people ask me, how do you jot down the stuff? Do you keep it in a journal or anything like that? I told you before that I have a really keen memory and I have a photographic memory. So I can go way back. I can remember things full detail. Anytime I talk about these experiences, it's like it happened 2 seconds ago. It's how vivid and everything is. It's like I relive that second every time I bring up the conversations or anything like that. I remember, you know, certain parts of it like clear as day.
Definitely.
So I drew this picture, and the reason I didn't do it because it was a quick little sketch, and all those pictures were actually really quick. I could go into really good detail, but I did an interview on Dr. J Radio, my first real interview, and he asked me if I could get some pictures together, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'll draw some up. So I drew all those up in one day, like really quick, and did those for the show. But so this one drawing that I had, I was in the craft, and I had 5 of these worker bee grays around me, and I had 2 of these tall whites, but they were in rugs. One was a female and the other one was a male, and they were looking at me while I was laying on the table, and this is where they were doing the body scan, and I believe they were also taking sperm and stuff like that, because, and I don't really talk about this at all, it's kind of embarrassing, but I do remember having intercourse, or what seemed like it seemed like a dream, but it felt real. But I had intercourse with these 2 females, and this is before I even had sex.
This is the first time I ever heard of any of these things actually having a gender.
Well, there are male and female, so, yeah, I don't ever really talk about that at all because it's kind of embarrassing, but yeah, so at a young age, I remember having sex, and I think part of that is you hear about hybrids, you know, hybrids and stuff like that.
Right, right.
And I think, you know, my sperm was taking and maybe having intercourse with 2 female extraterrestrials that looked human. And this was like kind of like a weird lucid dream that was taking place in my bedroom, not aboard the craft. But I don't know, but I think I've probably, you know, contributed to some of the hybrids. And you talked about, if you're familiar with Dr. David Jacobs.
Certainly.
He's very into this,
the hybrids.
Yeah. He's into this conclusion that the hybrid race is going to take over humanity. Not the case. I find it, neat to be a part of that if that truly is. And that's my gut feeling, my intuition. I think that I've contributed to that. That's what it seems to be, especially with the physical analysis on my body and stuff like that. I believe that there are probably hybrid offspring of mine out there that I've never encountered.
Were you probed by any chance?
No probing.
Thank God.
No anal probing. but I mean, I had marks on my body, like blood vessels, bruising and stuff like that, and different marks on my body. So, I mean, but I don't remember a lot of like the actual procedures. But they do have, what I do remember is they have like, this, like wand metal rod or wand type thing that they can go over your body, and it's like a scan. It's really weird. They just kind of like hover it above your body, and it does some type of scan or something like that. And it's not really, like physically intrusive into your flesh or anything like that. But I remember that. And what I was going to say is about having, you know, maybe partaking in this hybridization, aspect of things, is I actually feel honored to have that. If that is true, but that's my gut feeling, to be a part of that, because it's like a whole nother evolutionary step in life. And it's neat to think that I could more than likely be a part of that. Now, I probably could have the answers for me if I've done hypnosis regression, but I've been hesitant on it because it's hard to trust another person. And I don't want someone to put false memories in my experiences, because they're all personal and they're important.
Understood. Like, and Nathan, I hate to do this, but we definitely are running out of time here. So I do want to just jump a little bit here, jump into a portal rather. And I want you to tell me a little bit about perhaps some of the things that you're experiencing in the current age, some of these UFO photos you took. Can we go over that?
Yeah, so those UFO photos that I took, these are crafts that I can call in. And so what I do is I go into kind of this telepathic communication. And first I set up myself. I really have to go into detail to explain how to do it, because everybody can do it. It just takes time and practice. But what I do is I call in these crafts. I project the telepathic communication out, and I, you know, I'll go into a quiet area where, you know, where there's not a lot of light pollution or people around. I'll go out into the mountains or something like that and call in these crafts. And so, you know, this goes back to, you know, when I was younger, how I had the ability to communicate and stuff like that. So I do a mental projection of where I'm located that current time. And I ask them, you know, with honest intentions and a pure heart, and just to come out and say hello. And those crafts that I've took that are on, that you're seeing, those are some of the crafts that have came into play, and some materialize fully, like that disc one that I have that's in black and white. I put a black and white filter on there so it's a little bit more visible to see, but there's also a colored one where you can see the grayish of that saucer type craft. There's another one that's kind of like a boomerang shape. It's blue. That one's not fully materialized. It's when they're kind of in what I would refer to as a light ship. It's not fully materialized. It's producing light of the craft. But no, I get these in. And when I call them in, I don't do it all the time, because it's actually exhausting to do. So, and sometimes I'm not fully centered, so I don't feel like I can really give a clear projection. And I do a lot of communicating. I try to set it up as much as I can when I feel that my energy is at its highest level, and I'm grounded and I'm clear. And so I'll get that, and I'll get channeling messages. I get a lot of vivid dream state interactions and contacts and weird stuff like that. But a lot of like vibrational stuff with my body lately. Like, you know, I work odd hours, so I'll go to sleep and, you know, I'll take a nap at work, and, you know, while I'm napping, all of a sudden I get like what I felt, when I woke up in my bed after that physical interaction where I was hiding behind the door with those grays and taking aboard the craft. Well, at least that's what I kind of recall. I believe that happened.
Amazing. But, yeah.
Yeah, so I get these full body vibrations when I'm asleep, and it feels like I'm there's a presence in the room, but I can't physically see it. So I know that they're always with me all the time. So one thing that I see on a regular basis are like these shadow beings or these dark shadows that walk really fast across my house in like the downstairs basement, or I could be out in public and I'll see this like person or apparition that's like a dark shadow just streak past me or something like that. So I get weird things like that, and that happens on a regular basis.
My goodness. There's so much to talk about here, but.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot to share. So, I mean, I would hope that maybe we could continue this.
Definitely. We'll have to do this.
If people are really wanting, not just to know about my story, but I can give people the insight on how to communicate and how to make contact. I can go into further detail about the type of contacts and what kind of contacts there are, because there's all different types. There's channeling, there's dream state, there's physical contact, there's energetic contact. I mean, there's a lot that's involved in different types of contact. One thing that I was going to mention to you about like fruition and stuff like that, seeing like an event happen. So when I was a teenager, I had this good friend named Jason Lerbecki, and he's passed away. But the weird thing about it, before he died, I knew he was going to die. I was told that he was going to die when we were hanging out. And he was one of my friends that we had this rivalry with each other. We were kind of sometimes at each other, so we'd always compete. And I don't know why it was. You know, we used to race dirt bikes and stuff like that. And, you know, I grew up riding dirt bikes at a very young age, at the age of 5, and even still to this day. And, he would always try to push his level. And I'm like, Jason, you gotta tone it down. You're just not at that skill level, not like trying to be rude or mean, but like, I didn't want him to hurt himself. And, but we were hanging out one day, and all of a sudden I just got like this feeling. I'm like, he's going to die one day, and I know this. And the last time we hung out, which was like a few later years down the road, we hung out one night, and he had talked to me, and he's like, you know what? I'm really sorry if I was a jerk to you when we hung out. I'm like, it's okay, man. We're friends. You know, it's no big deal. And we're hanging out, and he ended up drinking and driving and got ejected out of the car. When I went home that night, I got a call first thing in the morning saying, hey, you know what? Jason died. And I just started to, like, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, no, that didn't happen. We just hung out. But I knew he was going to pass away, and I didn't know how to explain that. And I wasn't going to tell him that, you know.
That's amazing.
But, you know, some weird stuff. Like, I don't know. I've been getting a lot of, like intuitions of things, like with things happening. Like, I just recently did an interview with Tom from Flee the Cosmos, and I don't want to, you know, take away your audience from there, but he was talking about some of my dream state contact, and this was, you know, some events that were happening in my dreams, and I was getting these dreams of volcanoes happening a lot in my dreams, like the last little bit, and that was right before Kilauea went all crazy and stuff in Hawaii. But it was weird, like, I didn't, like, announced that there was going to be a volcano, but it was just kind of a weird synchronicity. Like, I was having all these volcano dreams, and then all of a sudden Hawaii had this huge volcano eruption going on and stuff like that. But I get weird things like that.
Yes, indeed. And again, Nathan, I do want to invite you back onto the program. We definitely have ran the time down here on the program, but again, I definitely have to invite you again very, very soon here, and we'll get into all these things we missed out on here tonight.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you letting me, you know, kind of just explain my story, and getting, you know, that clarified. But, you know, like I said, I have a lot of information that, we can go into. I mean, we can go really far down the rabbit hole if you want and talk about a lot of things. So.
No doubt. And we'll do it again very, very soon. Nathan, any final words before I cut you loose here?
Yeah, my final word is this quick little channeling message that was given to me. And I use this on a regular basis, and it goes, a cause without purpose leads to results that will not make a difference.
Fantastic. So
it's pretty deep, but it has a lot of meaning.
It really does. Nathan, again, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you very, very shortly here.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Michael, and I appreciate everybody taking the time to listen to my story. And if you have any questions, I'm here to help answer anything.
Fantastic. All right, Nathan, take care and good night.
All right. Good night.
And there he goes. My goodness, what a guest. And of course, I do want to show respect to our international listeners out there. Of course, the UK is still on top. How did that happen? I have no clue. I also want to give a little shout out to lgab.com. Amazing. Thank you, King Barther, for your contributions. You are a true patriot. Of course, the folks over at Paranormal Forum and The Fringe FM. Great, great folks. And of course, if you are listening to this on a replay, keep in mind, we are live every Saturday at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, on the TuneIn Radio app. Search End of Days and you'll find this little program. And of course, if you enjoy the show and want to help fund the program, go to michaeldeacon.com, hit that donate button there, and we'll be fine. I'm Michael Deacon. Thank you for listening. And with that said, the world is a mysterious place, and life itself is a mystery. Until next time, good night, everybody.